From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. At least half a dozen Democratic presidential contenders are skipping this year's AIPAC conference. Senators Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, and Elizabeth Warren, as well as Peter Buttigieg, Beto O'Rourke, and Julian Castro are among those apparently boycotting the annual conference of the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. The exodus came after the liberal group MoveOn.org called on presidential contenders not to attend. Well, attending the AIPAC conference signals unconditional support for Israel and has long been a bipartisan celebration of the U.S.'s close alliance with the nation. But this year, there appears to be cracks in the consensus that Israel can do no wrong. Meanwhile, newly elected Congresswoman Ilhan Omar of Minnesota spoke at the CARE LA banquet over the weekend in Southern California. Omar has become a lightning rod for right-wing pro-Trump and pro-Israel groups over her criticism of Israel. Her speech at the CARE LA banquet was met with hundreds of protesters on the streets outside denouncing her as anti-Semitic. My guest is Susan Abulhawa, novelist and activist, founder of Playgrounds for Palestine, author of My Voice Sought the Wind and Mornings in Jenin. Her writings have appeared in the New York Daily News, the Chicago Tribune, the Christian Science Monitor, Philadelphia Inquirer, Al Jazeera, and more. Welcome to the program, Susan.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, I understand that as the AIPAC conference had begun, you gave a keynote at the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs conference as well. So all of these sort of speeches are happening at around the same time, giving very different views on how Israel and the United States behave with one another. Let's first talk about the fact that there are at least six Democratic presidential contenders choosing to not attend the AIPAC conference. Is that really significant? Is that sort of unprecedented?
It is, actually. And I mean, we haven't seen anything like it since the inception of AIPAC, actually. And it is owing to the grassroots mobilization. Leaders actually follow the people ultimately. And this was a result of years of grassroots organizing and a heightened awareness of what Israel has been doing for the past seven decades to the indigenous population. And not only what it's been doing in Palestine, but actually what it's been doing all over the world.
So for the group MoveOn.org to make its call for presidential contenders to not attend AIPAC seemed also to be a pretty big deal. This is not an organization that has taken a strong stand on justice for Palestine or calling out the U.S.'s close relationship with Israel. Was that, too, you think, the result of this grassroots organizing?
Absolutely. My understanding is that MoveOn actually took a survey. They polled its members on where they stood on this issue and whether or not they would support boycotting AIPAC or not. So they apparently the result was overwhelmingly in favor of boycotting AIPAC, signaling this kind of growing awareness again of Israeli apartheid. So it wasn't they weren't really taking a huge risk because MoveOn in fact was simply responding to the overwhelming sentiment among its members.
Right, 74% of MoveOn's members said that that conference ought not to be attended by Democratic presidential contenders. So you have, on the one hand, people like Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, and I want to get to them in a minute, but then you have the Steny Hoyers and the Chuck Schumers. Steny Hoyer gave his speech over the weekend, and of course, as you and I are talking, that conference continues, but in his speech, he was very, very angry about the fact that there are people who are questioning the U.S. relationship with Israel. He said, "I stand with Israel proudly and unapologetically. So when someone accuses American supporters of Israel of dual loyalty, I say, accuse me." I thought those were really strong words. He's basically saying, "I have dual loyalty to the U.S. and Israel."
Right. And so then he does stand accused in that case. The implication of what he's saying is that he's beyond criticism. And he's beyond that that accusation. In fact, he's not. He's, you know, Representative Ilhan Omar was right to question this sort of unwavering support for a foreign nation. And a foreign nation, and it's not just any country, it's a country that has engaged in espionage against us. In fact, one of the worst cases of espionage against the United States was conducted by Israel. And also, it's a country that's engaged in massive human rights abuses. One of the longest and most documented instances of human rights abuses. So it's what's truly remarkable is the fact that for all these years, these decades, there has been practically a peep from lawmakers daring to criticize or even question this strange, special, quote-unquote, relationship between the United States and Israel.
When you said that Israel is engaged in espionage over in the U.S., are you referring to the way in which members of the Israeli government and cabinet have essentially kept tabs on those people who are struggling for justice for Palestinians here in the United States?
No, I'm talking about the Jonathan Pollard case back in I guess it was the 70s. I'm sorry, I might not have the dates right. It was either the 60s, I think it was the 70s, in which nuclear secrets were stolen, and it was the intelligence community said this was the worst breach of U.S. Intelligence that they had ever experienced. So there's that, and there's also, you know, other instances, but that was when I referred to the worst, that's the one.
So you have also people like, of course, Mike Pence, who spoke at the APAC conference on Monday and made it very, very clear that he disapproved of Democrats boycotting APAC. And we've seen the Trump administration and Trump directly and Republican Party members and supporters of Trump try to make this issue of supporting Israel as an election tactic, right? You've had Trump use this term, Jexodus. There is a Jewish exodus from the Democratic Party, and we welcome them to the Republican Party with open arms. And I'm wondering if you think that the Republican Party's wholehearted embrace of AIPAC is meant to send a signal that they want Democratic Jews to switch allegiance to their party.
Well, I mean, I don't know how much of that that rhetoric is actually backed by actual data and real hard, you know, migration from one party to another. I don't have actual information on that. However, what I will say is that so Israel is no longer a bipartisan issue. That's the big takeaway from this. And no longer is there no daylight between the United States and Israel when it comes to, at least when it comes to political discussions in Washington. So that's the bigger takeaway. And it's also the single issue that's splitting the Democratic Party. It's pushing the liberals away and on one side and the progressive Democrats on another. You know, a lot of American Jews, even those who support Israel, are also, you know, they're loyal to the Democratic Party and because they believe in universal health care and a well-funded social security and regulations on banking and consumer issues, and so and they believe in a strong education. So a lot of the liberal values of American Jews aren't going to go away overnight. Of course, there are going to be some whose loyalty to Israel sort of, you know, is you know their number one voting issue, and so it's possible that they would sort of migrate over to the Democratic Party. But how much of that actually is going to happen, I don't know. Hmm. But honestly, I'm not. That's not something that I concern myself with on a regular basis. What I'm concerned with is that the issue of Palestine and the great injustice, this enduring injustice that we've not even been able to discuss in this country, is finally sort of seeing the light of day when it comes to discourse. And this is in large part thanks to a single woman, you know, Ilhan Omar, just speaking truth, plain and simple, saying, why can't we discuss this? I'm a representative of the United States. Why can't I question our support of a foreign nation that I have no allegiance to? And why do all of you around me in Washington have allegiance to this foreign country? I don't understand. And it's a very plain, obvious, simple question and simple truth that no one in seven decades in Washington has really been able to put forth in such a forceful way. And she has. I mean, you know, of course, you know, there, I mean, the times are different. This country is, it has a different political sort of awareness than it did in the past. And she also is surrounded by like-minded sisters. They're few in number, but they're there. Rashida Tlaib, AOC, and others. But, you know, I would say Representative Omar is the one who's been kind of leading the charge on this.
And in many ways, in doing that, doesn't she take a great personal risk? I'm sure you and many others have known this for years. Whenever you speak out about Palestinian rights and thereby have to point out Israeli injustices against Palestinians, become targets for this very, very organized machine that comes after you and accuses you of being anti-Semitic and thereby tries to shut all conversation on it. So she's put herself in that position at the highest levels.
She has put herself in and her family in physical danger by, and as all people who speak truth to power do, but especially someone in such a visible and political office. She has become a particular target. And you can see, I think today there was something in the Washington Post, like a full page ad against her. I mean, the attacks on her have been relentless. They have been vile and unrelenting. And just, I'm amazed by her perseverance and her ability to withstand all this. Right. Because a lot of people don't. People fold. And I mean, we've seen this time and time again. Even, you know, the slightest kind of hint that someone in public, in a public space or with an audience, would dare to question Israel or express sympathy with Palestinians or suggest that Palestinians deserve universal human dignity and human rights. When people dare to do that, they're attacked, and many of them can't withstand that onslaught because it does come at a huge personal and professional price.
Right. She, in fact, initially when she was called out by her Democratic colleagues and accused of engaging in anti-Semitic tropes, she did apologize. And I think many others thought, all right, here we go again. Another outspoken critic has been shut down. But she then continued to speak out and has really raised this issue in the Democratic Party and Congress like it hasn't been raised before. When she spoke at her event at CARE LA, there was a large group of people who demonstrated for hours. And I thought it was a very symbolic demonstration because you had these, you know, people flying the Israeli flag and the pro-Israel voices alongside the pro-Trump voices. And it seems to me that the real kind of split here that we're seeing is between right-wing supporters of Israel and others, right? That it's not that it's Jews on American Jews on one side and everybody else on the other side, but it's the right-wing supporters of Israel, and among them might be some Jews, and many might not, right?
Right. So so support of Israel is a right-wing endeavor, but you're right. It's not, you know, Jews on one side and others on, no, it's the right wing people on one side. And I should point out that there is a huge swath of the Jewish community in the United States, that does not support Israel. And in fact, not only just doesn't sort of passively doesn't support them, but actively repudiate Israel and have set up institutions fighting for Palestinian rights. So to say that this is kind of a Jewish, it's a Jewish thing, it's not. There are a lot of right-wing evangelical Christian Zionists who form a huge base for Israeli support. So you're right to say that this is split along right wing, left wing, and you know, during my talk this past Friday at the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs annual conference, I pointed a lot of these things out, like what Israel is not a force of progressiveness or democracy or liberalism. Israel is in fact a force of fascism and colonialism and suppression and violence and war.
Keeping that narrative going and seeing the right-wing allegiance, American allegiance to Israel, how significant is Trump's insistence now that the Golan Heights should be recognized as a formal part of Israel?
Well, you know, the United States is not the final arbiter of anything. It's just that, you know, what the United States says carries some weight because we are a powerful country. But, you know, Israel's occupation of the Golan Heights, just like their occupation of Jerusalem, is illegal. It has no international legitimacy. And that's the reason why other nations never moved their embassies to Jerusalem following the United States. So regardless of what Donald Trump says, this is an international legal issue. And Israel has absolutely no legitimacy, no claim to the Golan Heights. It's occupied Syrian territory, and its status as such remains that way. This, you know, it's that's not going to change.
Finally, I'm wondering if you can also comment on some of the things that Ilhan Omar said in her speech at the CARE LA conference. One of the things that she brought up was how Trump's Islamophobia is directly linked to the New Zealand massacre. And you know, she just made that very clear connection. And she herself, again, as a target, not only of someone who criticizes Israel, but as a hijab-wearing Muslim American woman and a refugee from Somalia, symbolizes in so many ways, right, that person that Trump's base and Trump himself fear and loathe.
Well, you know, the evidence, direct evidence in the truth of what she said, it comes from the manifesto of the terrorist himself, who said that he was inspired by Donald Trump. Right. You know, and a lot of and he's not the only one, you know,
Dylan Roof.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. Dylan Roof. I mean, he likewise, all of these a lot of these white supremacists are they're MAGA folks, and they are saluting Donald Trump. They are they see in him this kind of revival of white power, and you know, we know they've been organizing for years and just sort of waiting for their moment. And I, in many ways, Donald Trump sort of symbolizes that moment for them. And not just symbolizes, I mean, he's, you know, we all know, we've seen the wink, wink, nod, nods he's given and the sort of dog whistles on his Twitter account and in public and him saying things like, you know, he doesn't think that white supremacy is a problem, and during Virginia saying that the Virginia marches, that, you know, those were good people on both sides, quote unquote. So he's made these explicit and implicit statements of support for white supremacists, and it is it's a natural conclusion and a logical one to say that the growth of white supremacy and the emboldenment of these groups has emanated from him, from having such a powerful person in the United States sort of affirm their racism, and so it's no surprise that they're taking their guns out and shooting people now.
Susan, give out a website for your organization, Playgrounds for Palestine.
We do have a website. Yes, it's exactly what you said, playgroundsforpalestine.org.
And we'll link to that from our website as well. I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks, Sunali. It was my pleasure.
My guest has been Susan Abulhawa, novelist and activist, founder of Playgrounds for Palestine. Her books include My Voice Sought the Wind and Mornings in Jenin. And we've been discussing whether the conversation on Israel and Palestine is changing in the United States, thanks in large part to Representative Ilhan Omar. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.